Hello, 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 and welcome. This is Talk the Plank, episode 65 of Pittsburgh Pirates podcast on SB Nation's Bucks Dugout. I'm Nathan Hirsch, and I'm with Jake Slobodnik. The Pirates didn't get a hit today. Jake, how are we feeling?
I'm feeling confused. No hits, and we still end up with a win. Why does it strike me that this is definitely only something that the Pirates could do, just because of how inconsistent they are? I'm still trying to piece this together.
Yeah, so it is crazy. I would say it's pretty Pirates. The team didn't get a hit today. The Pirates won 1-0 against the Reds. Hunter Green was awesome for the Reds, throwing 100 miles like it was nothing. 7 1/3, 9 strikeouts. He got the loss, though. He gave up the run. Well, he was responsible for the run that scored. 5 walks, though. It's a lot of walks. The Pirates, although they didn't get a hit, they got on base. Got on base enough. Get Brian Hayes in the 8th inning. Game-winning go-ahead fielder's choice. And you look at the line here. 1 run, 0 hits. Pirates win. They split with the Reds. They're now 15-19 on the season. And pretty exciting Sunday, if I say so myself. It's fun to win whenever you put the most minimal effort possible. As someone back to my college days thinking about putting the most minimal effort ever, you know, getting decent grades enough, I resonate with this win, and I thought it was really fun.
I more or less resonate with how Hunter Green feels, doing all the work and then still getting shanghaied in the end. I can't say that he threw a bad game. I mean, yeah, awesome. I mean, 9 strikeouts, gave up 5 walks, 3 of them in his last inning of work, but he threw 118 pitches, 69 of them were strikes. We all know that if this was Derek Shelton managing the Reds, he would have pulled Green in the 5th, despite the accolade going, but we got to credit Hunter Green with throwing a great game. It's just he lost a little bit of control in that 8th. Pirates took advantage of it. They smelled blood in the water, and Key Brian Hayes, who else but him would come through in the clutch? RBI on a fielder's choice. And it's so funny because I was actually at the Altoona Curve game, all right? And that game was not anything, you know, fun to watch. And so I have the game cast on my phone, and it's progressing through the game. And I'm like, okay, the Pirates aren't getting any hits. Like, when is that moment where the Reds just start taking over? And then all of a sudden, we're in the car right after the game, and I see and I hear on the radio that the Pirates scored one. And here we go to the 9th. I mean, I knew once I heard David Bednar was coming in, I knew it was over. But the fact that we won without getting a hit, I mean, it's better to be on this side of history than to lose while getting no hit, which we are familiar with. But this is so weird. Like I don't think any of us pictured this. Maybe a series win, maybe loss even, just because it seems like that's the common theme against the Reds. But never in my life would I ever thought that I would see the Pirates win a game against a divisional rival, nonetheless, whether no matter how good or bad they are, without getting a hit. I mean, we have a lineup of hitters. We have at least Vogelbach, Hayes, and Gamble, who you think would at least get a hit. Maybe Castro is good for a hit here and there. But that, I don't know how to, I don't know what to think of this game. I mean, how do you comprehend your favorite team getting no hit but still winning? It's like you want to cheer for the win, but you also have to realize, like, oh my God, we didn't get any hits. Like, that's a little alarming. But in my opinion, this is just a traditional Sunday baseball game for the Pirates, a Sunday ball assembly game. But I'm happy we won. I'm happy that we didn't lose the series to the Reds, albeit in exciting fashion. Take it as you wish. But I don't know. Like I said, I don't know how to comprehend today. This was something. And we talk about Hunter Green. I have to give credit to Jose Quintana. Another dude shoved again this Sunday. I mean, 3 hits allowed over 7 innings, 5 Ks. His ERA on the season now, 2.19. Yep. Nate, I don't know if we can even remember the last time a Pirates starter within the last 5 years, I'll say, had an ERA under 5, let alone under 2.20. That's impressive.
Yeah, Quintana was definitely awesome. And over his last three or four starts, he's just been really solid. I mean, he pitched six scoreless against the Dodgers in the start previous to this one. In the two starts before that, five innings he pitched in each of them, giving up two and one run respectively. So he has been a gem for the Pirates on the starting pitching side for sure. Seven innings today, scoreless. I can't remember the last time a Pirates starter went seven, to be honest. I don't think it's happened this season yet. But yeah, Quintana was awesome. Stratton held it together. He was a little shaky, but he got through the inning, not allowing a run. And of course, Bednar. You just know he's going to slam the door shut every single time. A little history here, though. So this is the sixth time since 1901 that a team has won a game without recording a single hit. The last time it happened, the Dodgers beat the Los Angeles Angels. That was in 2008. It happened once in 1992, 1990, 1967, and 1964. That is it. So Pirates kind of making some history today without getting a hit. Just incredible. And you said you don't really know how to comprehend this. I'll tell you how. A win is a win. Pirates split the series. They avoided another embarrassing series loss to the worst team in baseball. The Reds are 9-26. They are not good at all. A win is a win is a win. We'll take it. And this is from Alex Stumpf, which he tweeted from Elias. From the Pirates' perspective, they were no hit in a regulation length game. From the Reds' perspective, it would go in the record books as a, quote, no-hitter of fewer than nine innings, similar to what Madison Bumgarner did in the seven-inning game last year. So technically not like a full-blown no-hitter per se, but you could safely say the Pirates got no hit, got the win, and yeah, the pitching was huge. Last two games, the pitching has been really, really good, giving up one run total over the past two games. Zach Thompson was solid in the Saturday game, and you know, splitting a series overall, it doesn't feel great. It doesn't feel terrible. But whenever you drop the first two in the fashion the Pirates did, they just kind of looked lifeless. The way they were able to react get back on track and, you know, rally, that's the word I was looking for. They won the last two games, 15-19. You feel slightly better about them, even though they didn't get an entire hit. That's crazy, but two wins, you'll take it. And the Pirates, they're looking okay. They're looking better than they did Friday evening. So I don't care that they didn't get a hit. In fact, I was actually rooting for it. Once they scored, I was like, oh, thank goodness they're up. Shut it down, get the win, no hits. And in that eighth inning, when it was first and second one out, you know, you were still hoping, all right, they got to get a hit to get the run in. But once that third walk loaded the bases up and there was one out, bases loaded, in my mind I was like, I think I'd rather see a sac fly than a hit here. And it wasn't a sac fly, it was a fielder's choice, but hilarious nonetheless. We'll take it. I'll take it. As a fan, I'll take it. I don't care. Pretty solid weekend.
I agree. And sticking on to today's game, it's one of those scenarios where, okay, we're in a way hitting rock bottom. Let's just see if we can keep going. Like you said, they had bases loaded. And I think we should credit really the plate discipline that the Pirates brought to the game today, out walking the Reds 6-2. If they don't watch those pitches, and if they're a little more antsy to hit, especially Michael Perez, I know giving Michael Perez any sort of credit, you know, yields a groan from the listener, but
two walks,
that's not terrible. And I know he's not hitting much, but he's at least watching pitches. He's making the pitchers work. Daniel Vogelback, he was brought in because he can watch pitches, and he drew a walk today. Gamble always a good one to watch pitches. It just goes to show how disciplined these Pirates can be on a really good day. And today's one of those examples. And I'm sure Derek Shelton is really holding his head high over this, or really holding his team to a high standard. You know, he obviously is aware that they didn't draw any hits, which is obviously something they're going to work on. But in a way, he has that mentality of, like you said, you win a game, it doesn't matter how great or how pretty it is. As long as you win a game, that's all that really matters. And, you know, all these hits don't go in the record books. What goes up is a win or a loss. And if you can get a win without getting a hit, it's still a win. You're on a weird side of history, and you can credit the guys for at least doing some of their job. They may not be putting the ball in play and getting on base that way. They're at least they're watching the pitches. And I always learned from my dad, on base percentage is more valuable than batting average. And this is a good example of that today.
For sure. I was thinking about this, and I'm thinking, I want to know your thoughts. So the Pirates won without getting a hit. Is there any kind of parallel in any other sport? Like, what would this look like? And the example I kind of thought of was maybe in football, if a team won like 2-0 from like a safety only, and that was it. Or maybe they get like one pick six and they win the game like 7-3 or something like that. Do you have any way of comprehending this from like another sports perspective?
Definitely the safety only in football, because yeah. I think that's actually happened before. I tried searching it while you were talking about it, but I couldn't find anything. But I remember hearing about it one time. But maybe also in hockey, you know, somebody accidentally chipping it into their own net. But
yeah.
You know, their goalie still pitching essentially a shutout, but them losing. That's the only thing I can really think of.
Or like maybe in hockey, like the goalie scores on an empty net during like a delayed penalty or something like that.
Yeah, that's true.
It's something crazy like that. Like, obviously, you know, we're talking extremely rare stuff right here. It's only happened in baseball 6 times since 1901 that a team has won without recording a hit. I just think it's funny. I mean, that's really the only way you can describe it today is funny. Like the Pirates, they're not very good, but there are some positives, I guess. The Pirates were 0-4 with runners in scoring position, left 5 on base. Just I don't know. I don't know what to think. It's funny though. And yeah, like basketball, there's no comparison. There's no parallel. Maybe soccer. It's like, yeah, you win because of an own goal or something like that. But it's funny. It's just funny to think about that.
Yeah, and same thing for like other secondary sports like lacrosse, field hockey. Like it's weird because it's such a rare event that you can parallel it, but at the same time, a no-hit win is in a league of its own, no pun intended. It's sort of like I don't want to say a double standard because that's not really a double standard. It's more or less like it's not an ironic situation, but you know what I'm saying. Like it fits into another category, but it has a category of its own.
Yeah. Yeah, it was awesome. And here we are yet again, another Pirates series in which they're outscored by a good amount. They split the series 2-2, but overall, aggregate-wise, they were outscored 13-6. So this is now – man, they've been outscored in every series since the Tigers doubleheader, 10 or so games ago. And you look at it here, if you look at the standings, the Pirates still, their run differential is just, it's bad. They're at minus 56 runs. Although I will say, not last, the Reds are still in last in Major League Baseball, but the Pirates are catching up. The Reds are at minus 65 on the run differential all season long. Pirates are at minus 56. So those are the two worst teams in baseball. The next worst after that, this is funny but sad, but the next worst after that is the Kansas City Royals. They're at minus 44 runs. So there's a gap between the Reds and the Pirates and everyone else. But that said, Pirates are only 4 games under 500. They're in third place in the division. They're not currently one of the worst teams in baseball record-wise, so I don't care. I'll enjoy the wins while I can take them.
Yeah, and you look at it, like you said, they're not the worst team in baseball, despite how, you know, it may be so painful to watch them play every game because it seems like the team is so much worse than they are. But four games under 500 in the middle of May, third in the division, albeit an extremely weak division, that's a lot to smile about. And I don't want to credit the coaching somewhat. Maybe you want to credit some breakout players this season, Key Brian Hayes being who he was predicted to be. I think if we don't have Daniel Vogelbach and Jose Quintana on this team, plus a very overachieving bullpen, we would be right at the bottom with Cincinnati. But I'm really glad that some of these guys stepped up in a year that is probably not going to go the way they would hope. They're going to step up and try to win as many games as possible. And I think a lot of that also stems from the culture of the clubhouse. I mean, you see Daniel Vogelbach leading the guys in just being positive, being a good body of light, a good veteran presence for him. Same with Quintana, which, by the way, Quintana, congratulations, 10 years of service in the MLB. That in of itself deserves some recognition. Roberto Perez was obviously somebody who can hype up the clubhouse, but unfortunately he's injured. Overall, these guys are just happy to be playing ball. They're not, you know, it's not like the losing keeps weighing on their head. They know that they're not where they should be, but they still have fun with it. And I think that's what sort of transcends into the success that they're having. I mean, St. Louis is pretty close to us too. I mean, we're only 4.5 games away from them and only 6 games away from the top of the division, which I know that's a long stretch. And considering the NL Central is a weak division, it may seem like there's no notoriety behind that, but that's still impressive considering the 2022 Pirates were counted out by 99.9% of people prior to the start of the season. So this is a definitely impressive spot. And I think once we see these young bodies like O'Neill Cruz and hopefully Mason Martin and Cal Mitchell all get promoted to the MLB within the next few weeks, I'm going to say month or two, because that seems to be where we're headed. I think it's going to, we're only heading upwards. There doesn't seem to be much, much room for a descent here, unless things just go completely wrong.
Yeah, and if you look at it right now, they're 15-19. At this point last season, I just looked it up, they were 14-20. So they're kind of on the same pace as last year. But last year in May, that's when the wheels really started to fall off. The end of May last year, they went from 14-20, and then a few weeks later, they were 20-33. So if the Pirates, I mean, looking at the schedule here, if they can hold it together for the rest of this month, and I kind of hinted at this on the last podcast, the schedule, it's tough, but it's not like, you know, it's not like a buzzsaw. It's not crazy. They go at Chicago starting tomorrow, Monday through Wednesday, 3 games with Chicago. The Pirates have handled Chicago pretty well this season. I think that, you know, there's a world where they win two out of three games there. Then they come back home against St. Louis. They've only played St. Louis one time this season. That was to open the season. I don't know. St. Louis doesn't impress me that much. They're good. They're probably going to get their 88 to 90 wins and sneak slimily into the playoffs like they always do. But St. Louis doesn't really impress me that much. After that, they host 3 against Colorado. Once again, that's another team this season that's kind of overachieving a little bit. Colorado is actually over 500. They're 17-16. Once again, that's not exactly a super team there. Colorado, their run differential is minus 27, so they've been pretty lucky this season. I think the Pirates could win some of those games. So those are the next 9 games. I mean, I think there's a chance that they could win 6 of those games, maybe 5 of those games. And we're looking at that point, then they would be perhaps what? They'd be 20-24, something like that. And we'd have a nice chunk into the season. And the Pirates, I'm not saying they're going to be relevant or make any type of push at any type of serious winning, but when comparing this year's team to last year's team, you definitely want to see an improvement. And hopefully after this next stretch of 9 games or so, you can say, all right, they're 21-23. They're 20-24. They're better at this point this year than they were last year. And I think that should be the goal. And obviously we remember last year the Pirates won 60 games. They went 60-101. Who says they can't win 70 games this year? So they're making positive steps. I know a bad division helps, but I would like to see them win a lot of these games coming up here.
And like you said, it's not impossible. I mean, we've shown that we can stick with the Dodgers and the Padres, who we finish out May with. Colorado is, in my opinion, getting lucky. I mean, if it weren't for Connor Joe and Elias Diaz, ironically, both former guys within the Pirates organization.
Crazy.
And then some overachieving pitchers. I mean, they'd probably be at the bottom of the barrel too. And like, I agree with you about St. Louis. They're not tremendous by any means. Yeah, they got a few good players, and like you said, they're going to slimily move into the playoff race, but they're not world beaters. So I think we can definitely hang with them. And Cubs being the Cubs, I mean, we got them coming up next. I think it's going to look promising. My big thing for the Pirates is how they respond in the second half of the season, because there always seems to be that second half collapse that they have. No matter how well or how poorly they do in that first half, they always seem to find a way to just completely find a new way to just go down. And I think that's always in the second half. And it might be because they already know they're out of the playoff race, or, you know, the Steelers are coming to town soon. I don't know what they do in that second half, but they always seem worse for wear. So I want to be very optimistic about this first half that they're putting on, but I also need to be cautious. And I think so do other people, because that second half collapse is what we need to look forward to. If they can hold that off and at least sort of lighten the blow a little bit, I think they'll definitely be in a lot better shape than they were last year. But if they continue to have that downward spiral like they have in recent years, then all of this talk about how they're performing in the first half is going to go right down the dumpster with them. So I am enjoying it for the time being, but I also can't get too ahead of myself to the point where I believe that this is going to be a big turnaround year for them.
Yeah, and I think, too, in the second half, the Pirates, it'll be tough because who knows at the trade deadline if they decide to ship away Vogelbach or Quintana or these nice veterans that are kind of leading the way right now, ship them away because they're only on one-year deals anyways. Might as well get something for them, I guess. Although at this point, I don't even know if that's worth it anymore, but that's definitely a reason why these collapses happen. But on the other hand, I do think soon enough, we're going to get some of these prospects called up, like O'Neal Cruz, like Roansy Contreras. We should mention that Rodolfo Castro, like minutes after we recorded our last podcast, was called up. And salute to Cole Tucker. He is no longer with the team. He's down in AAA. So some of these prospects are going to get called up. That should help. You know, you replace the Cole Tucker at bats, you replace the Josh Van Meter at bats with at bats from O'Neal Cruz. Hopefully that helps out a lot. And I keep, you know, harping on it here, but I think Brian Reynolds at some point here has to pick it up, and that will definitely help. And you know, I am optimistic. I do think the pitching is coming along this series. We saw a really great start from Zach Thompson, so that's encouraging. Although JT Brubaker, Mitch Keller, not too great, but whatever. I guess not everything can be super peachy. But yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting thing to think about how the rest of the season is going to look. Is there any other takeaways you had from this Red series?
I think with Rodolfo Castro, give him some time to really start heating up. I understand that he didn't have the best weekend in Cincinnati after being called up. But I think his time is coming. I think he just needs to get more acclimated to the game. And I think he'll get more opportunities as time goes on. Josh Van Meter, I have learned, is going to sneak his way into the lineup every goddamn game. There is no, you
right.
could, you could call up O'Neal Cruz, Jiwon Bae, Nick Gonzalez, Leover Piguero, everybody in the Pirates system that is great, and they will still prioritize Josh Van Meter over them. God knows why, but, I mean, I don't know. I can't pinpoint why exactly Josh Van Meter is so loved, but that's one thing I've had that's taken away. Yeah, Thompson's outing was really good and really promising. I think maybe it was just one bad start for him throughout the season, because I mean, he pitched well when he was sick, and he pitched well this past week, or, you know, yesterday too, at the time of us recording. So, I mean, I think he's still a good arm. I think it's just, he had one, maybe two bad outings that, and I mean, all pitchers are going to have that. That's something you can't avoid as a pitcher at all. So I'd say we just, you know, take it with what it is, and that he's going to, he's on the mend for that. Trying to think what else, because I did have a few takeaways, but I honestly forget the rest of them. But those are at least the main ones that I have. JT Brubaker and Mitch Keller are still going to do their thing, so I'm not even going to try to. I'm not even going to touch them.
Yeah, that's fair. And I guess we could cover some of these transactions this weekend. Sam Howard was claimed by the Detroit Tigers, so he is no longer with the Pirates. Cam Aldred was called up for a game, sent back down because the Pirates claimed Tyler Beede. Tyler Beede is he's an arm, and kind of sad to see it, but Bo Salser was DFA'd, and he was picked up by the Baltimore Orioles. So it's kind of interesting. Of all the players that the Pirates have DFA'd this year, it seems like they're all getting claimed by other teams. I don't know if that's a good sign that they were talented enough in the first place to get claimed, or a bad sign that the Pirates are letting these seemingly decent arms go for nothing. But Bo Salser with the Orioles, Sam Howard with the Tigers, and the Pirates get Tyler. Is it Beede? I think it's Beede. Tyler Beede.
Yeah, Beede. It's Tyler Beede. Sam Howard, I don't really care about. He was washed anyway, so Tigers can have him. I was more pissed about Bo Salser. He was good.
Yeah, I know that's your guy.
Well, it's not so much him being my guy. It's the fact that he was good, and he had one bad relief outing for the Pirates, but he preceded that with about four, maybe five good outings. So I don't know why the hell we DFA'd him and got rid of him so quickly. And it's just so funny that Cam Aldred is still on the 40-man roster. I mean, that's not discrediting Aldred at all, but I mean, I thought Bo could have been a good arm for us whenever, you know, when he came up. I thought, you know, call him up later in the season, have him be a mainstay in the bullpen, because I'm telling you what, Heath Henry is starting to piss me off. So I would like to see him go, and I would have loved to have Bo Salser in that pen instead. So yeah, I don't know why we got rid of Salser. I understand Howard. He was given chance after chance. And until the crackdown of the sticky stuff, he was good. But then after that, he sucked. So I kind of got rid of him. Tyler Beede, I saw a meme on Twitter the other day, and it was of Ben. It was of somebody with wide eyes, and it said Ben Cherington anytime he hears former first round pick. And that's
that was what Neil Huntington thing too.
No, yeah. Well, he was a former first round pick, I think, out of was it Nova? It doesn't really matter. He's not that good of a pitcher anyway. So I don't know. I kind of agree with all of these except Bo Salser, but it is what it is. He's on the Orioles now. Hopefully we never have to face him in the World Series scenario where he shuts us down. But yeah, I have tremendous respect for Bo Salser. He worked his ass off, because I saw him a few times in the minors, and he was good. He had a hit. He had a few hits too on offense, which was pretty cool. But yeah, all the best of luck to him. Hopefully Sam Howard can pick himself back up in Detroit, but I doubt that. And Tyler Beede, welcome to Pittsburgh. We would prefer it if he didn't suck, but again, we wouldn't. It's not like we're expecting you to be lights out either.
Yeah, we'll see. And I'll say this about Beede. This season, 9 2/3 innings. He has walked more than he has struck out. Hasn't been good at all. In 2019, though, he did pitch 117 innings, and he started 22 games. Definitely a reliever now. I mean, his fastball sits in the mid to upper 90s, which I guess is nice. But yeah, kind of like you hinted at, like what makes him so much better than Bo Salser, and why did we feel the need to claim him and get rid of Salser? It doesn't really seem like that big of an upgrade, if an upgrade at all. It might be a downgrade. Who knows? We'll see how it works out. But I guess we will see how it works out. And Beede is primarily out of the bullpen. He hasn't started a game since 2019. Didn't pitch in 2020. And in 2021, he only pitched one inning, so hasn't really pitched a lot over the past few years, but the Pirates will give him a chance, so we'll see how that works out. Before we get out of here, we'll just look at the
Pirates Cubs series real quick. The Pirates don't have a listed starter for the Monday game, but they'll oppose Wade Miley. In the Tuesday game, we get JT Brubaker. The Cubs don't have a posted starter for that game. And then in the Wednesday game, it'll be Mitch Keller against Drew Smyly. I'm just going to say it. The Pirates win two out of these three. They get their righty-heavy lineup against a pair of lefties here. And I think, you know, with how the season's going, Brubaker and Keller will bounce back. And, you know, that'll continue the roller coaster of their careers.
Yeah. Keller and Brubaker, I don't know about them, but it is what it is. They'll trot them out there every day for the rest of the season. We'll see how they do. But I mean, if I had to pick between one of them or both of them, who I think would have a better bounce back, I think it's JT Brubaker just because of his, you know, his break on his pitches that he has, whereas Keller just seems to throw straight darts that people launch out of the park. But who knows? Maybe one, if not both of them, will rebound. We can only hope.
Yeah, I guess, though, too, in his last start, Brubaker wasn't too bad. Five innings pitched, two earned runs, but still got the loss. All right, we'll wrap things up there. The Pirates were no hit today, but they won. Not sure how to feel about that even now after recording this podcast, but a win is a win. Hitting is overrated anyway. Just draw walks and drive runners in. It's called productive outs. And don't allow any runs. That's how you win without getting a hit. That's what the Pirates did today. Jake, you want to give us your Twitter before we get out of here?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at _RadioJake.
Awesome. Find me on Twitter at Nathan_Hirsch. And you spell Hirsch, H-U-R-S-H. And, of course, follow Bucks Dugout on Twitter as well. Got some great articles up there, as well as this awesome podcast that you're listening to right now on Spotify Live. But, you know, you're probably listening. If you're not listening live now, you're probably on Apple or something like that, anywhere where you get your podcast, blah, 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 blah. We will be back Wednesday afternoon after the conclusion of the Cubs series, and hopefully the Pirates somehow, some way, they're finding new and exciting ways to win, but at least they're winning some of the times. We'll see what they can do this week against the Cubs. Hopefully they can pull out a few wins here. Jake, any last thoughts before we get out of here?
No, sir. We'll talk to you guys on Wednesday.
All right, everyone, have a great rest of your day, and peace out.